It's almost too easy.
There's got to be a catch.
Exactly.
Are there air conditioning complications this time?
No, no. The air conditioner is turned off and it is not leaking water all over the floor, I am pleased to say.
Was it doing that before?
It turned out to be, I hadn't even noticed. It was the maintenance people came out because the guy with the office under mine was having a small tropical moment. And then the maintenance people came in and I'm like, no, everything's fine. And I looked and there's this huge and spreading water stain on the carpet where the leaky valve had been doing its
thing. Harvard is just as classy as I've always imagined.
Well, it's not even just like, oh, it's falling apart. It's this wonderful Potemkin thing where it's a brand new carpet, you know, with the dry rot underneath.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. You should get that, that janitor from over at MIT, that Will Hunting, he's really good.
Yes, I hear he's going places.
He's excellent. That young man, I'm telling you.
But imagine, though, if he were hanging around here, he'd end up being like this super lawyer.
Right, exactly. He'd solve legal cases on chalkboards. Right. And then
exactly, exactly. You come back in, it's like, that's the argument I needed.
That's the most amazing brief I've ever read. Right. Who did that? Who solved the separation of church and state?
That would actually be a really good parody.
Would be good. Or like at Juilliard, maybe he just travels the world's colleges, like leaving amazing things on chalkboards.
Or it'd be like Heroes. There'd be a whole group of them in their respective places. See, these mind-blowing.
Sure. See? Yeah. Who knew it would turn into a Hollywood pitch meeting? All right, so here we go. And I'm going to try this from the top and see what happens. Sam, we're good on levels. I'm John Moe. This is Future Tense from American Public Media for Monday, September 13th, 2010. Today we're talking with Jonathan Zittrain. He's the co-founder and co-director of Harvard University's Berkman Center for Internet and Society. You have probably heard Jonathan and other people from Berkman on this show a lot. Jonathan, there's so much information out there in the technology world on what new product Google rolls out or what smartphones to buy, whatever. But you're a big thinker, and we want to have some big thoughts, especially on a Monday. Let's kick Monday off in a thoughtful way with a mind-blower Monday and introduce us to the topic of reputation bankruptcy.
Well, one way to get into the topic is to think about the truism that we at least talk about kids today, digital natives, that we are easily persuadable to share information that at first, even to the early adopters, seems pretty personal, do I really want to share this? And then before you know it, you're doing it for a song. A great example of that is the range of applications for which the flagship is something called Foursquare, whereby you load an application onto your mobile phone, and when you enter a venue, whether it's the local grocery store or a concert you're going to or your place of work, you check in. And in checking in, it alerts all of your Foursquare and other friends that you have just checked into this place. And if you check in enough, you score points. And if you score enough points, you become the mayor of the place without the place even having been alerted that it has a mayor. And the points are good for nothing. You can't cash them in for frequent flyer miles or something. And the mayorship gives you no political power. And yet at the same time, people vie to be the mayors of venues and to check in more than others. And before you know it, you have this entire web of people announcing where they are at all times. And we are just the thinnest click away here in late 2010 to having this be an automated process. Instead of actually having to pull out your phone and declare where you are, you just put it in background mode. The sooner you can become a mayor that way. And now all of a sudden, something that I don't think 5 years ago we would have imagined people voluntarily constructing, which is to say a complete web of where they are at all times, announced not just to like their closest family or kids for, you know, highly inquisitive parents, but everybody to everybody.
Right.
Boom, we've suddenly built this thing.
They're an endangered they're endangered wildlife with tracking collars, all of us running around.
Right. Yes, and not just announced to a few researchers who will take 10 years to publish an article long after you're gone that says, gee, here's where you were before you weren't.
Yeah.
It's announcing it in real time.
And this is going out way beyond just Foursquare. Facebook announced similar functionality. The idea of constantly alerting the world wherever you are is the next big thing online right now.
Well, and that itself is just a leaf on the tree of – alerting people to your status at all times. I mean, who would have thought? This is – I don't know. People can think about when they first encountered Twitter as a concept. But the idea that somehow a status update alone shorn of any other functionality would be a core thing you'd want to do or browse from others. It's pretty amazing. And so, yes, a status update can be where you are. It can be, as we enter the realm of cheap sensors in the medical context, it can be, how's my heart rate? And if enough people are reporting their heart rates at all times from a certain area, just think about something like Google Flu Trends, where they look to see who's Googling Robitussin disproportionately in one area after another and say, looks like Cleveland's having a bad week. You could even say, looks like Cleveland's really nervous about something. Oh, the Browns must be playing this Sunday. And
Zoloft prescriptions went way up in Cleveland.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's one leg of this stool about just really rich data that people seem perfectly happy, excited even, to hand over more or less to the world at large, at least if they think of it as barely anonymized. Now another leg of the stool is where you start to get to judgments. It's not just facts about people, but attitudes about them.
And this is where reputation starts to come in.
Exactly. So a couple systems that we've seen do this are either systems that do it quite broadly, but for products, not people. So you go onto Amazon.com and you say that you're interested in the following thing, and then it says, this would be a perfect partner based on a proprietary algorithm that we need not share with you. We are convinced that if you like the Lego creator activity book, you would really want to read American Jihad, The Terrorists Among Us Today, which in fact
they know
was
me
an
so
association.
Well.
I know, and it was actually a moment when Amazon.co.uk was making exactly that association, which I think made some people back very slowly away from the Lego creator activity book. So that's one set of judgments that you can see Amazon or any other company like it wanting to mediate, where it says, if you like this, you'll like this, or you won't like that. You know, ditto for Pandora or other music selection systems, Genius on the Apple. And then we've also seen it in a narrower context with people. So you go onto eBay or something, and you might think twice before you click to buy now the plasma TV that's being advertised if it's from somebody who only has 3 reviews and 2 of them are negative. And we have some practice then in rating each other in a narrow commercial context. So my hypothesis is these two will be mixed like chocolate and peanut butter, and the Reese's peanut butter cup that will result is going to be an opportunity to rate people as you go about the world. So you meet somebody, you have a drink or something, maybe it's part of a group, and as you leave, you have an opportunity. It just says, all right, here's a list from our phones having rubbed antlers or come near to that. Here's a list of who you just met, thumbs up, thumbs down, each of them. And it'll be the kind of thing where if you want, you could thumbs up them in full view so they can see that you like them, and then later you can revise your judgment in private so it doesn't have to stick.
Well, you're an academic. Then, this sounds like ratemyprofessors.com or whatever those sites are, but for everybody.
Yes. Oh, yes, for everybody. And then mediated in a way, not just – I mean, Rate My Professor – to my knowledge, doesn't yet say if you hate this professor, you'll surely hate this other professor or vice versa. It just says, okay, here's a big pile of ratings for which the most negative ones tend to have lots of misspellings in them, which in the academic context is particularly worrisome. But I mean, here's one other example to think about before we jump back to the full view, which is suppose you were offered a deal on your car insurance – where you could get a discount, you could pay less per year, save maybe $200-$300 on your car insurance. If you agree to the following, you'll be issued a little TiVo-like clicker where you can thumbs up and thumbs down other cars. And in the meantime, you will be the target of thumbs up, thumbs down behavior of other participating drivers. And then as you are, you know, waiting at a traffic light and somebody pulls around and pulls a smart move to get ahead of you, you can thumbs down them. And should you do the same, you won't even know it, but you may well have been thumbs downed. And the basic algorithm would be that if enough people who are not habitually cranky thumbs downers thumbs down you in enough circumstances, your rates are going to go up because you must be doing something wrong, and vice versa. Now, I could see that, one, being a deal that most people would be willing to take if it reduced their insurance fees in the first instance. Two, I could see it being a deal that as it got adopted more broadly could greatly affect driving habits. Because for one thing, if you see one person cheating, everybody else in line is tempted to cheat too because they don't want to be, you know, chumps. But now they realize there's a karmic wheel of justice run by this TiVo system so that that person may get a momentary pleasure from running that red light or getting around everybody else, but they'll pay later when their statement of the month of their reputation comes in.
I can't decide whether I think this is a great idea or the most evil, abhorrent idea that's ever existed, because it seems like such a bullying of the mob, but yet everyone's driving better and I'm saving money.
I share exactly your ambivalence about this, and that's why I find it so interesting. And in fact, you can think of variations on the thought experiment. If you're participating in this system and there's a new presidential election coming up, how likely are you, if you support the ill-regarded third-party candidate, you know, Admiral Stockdale makes a comeback, I think he's the man, you know, how many thumbs downs might you be getting for having that bumper sticker on the back of your car in an area that can't stand that candidate?
Right.
You could see all sorts of behavior then that go out of the driving and into just humanity in general. And that does scare me. And at the same time, I could see how the act of coming into a bar in which you know no one, and or a coffee shop where you're just kind of sitting and working on something, could be greatly transformed if you could actually trust this system to say, here are three people in the coffee shop that you don't know and otherwise wouldn't greet, but they are second order friends of your friends. They're roughly, you know, they're not axe murderers. You know, why don't you say hi, or vice versa? And you could actually see it as a way of potentially peeling back the alienation that people in, you know, anonymous urban areas often experience.
But isn't all this – I mean, you're describing a world where we're constantly being rated and rating others and, you know, ever more connected, more baggage that we're carrying for good and ill around with us. But isn't it always going to be kind of opt-in? No one's forcing you to join Facebook. No one's yet forcing you to check in on Foursquare.
Well, that's true, and that's sort of how these things happen. But of course, once they become ubiquitous, you know, for whatever objection somebody might have had to email back in the day, you could say, well, at least email is opt-in. If you don't like it, write a letter. These days, of course, if you don't have an email address and you're trying to apply for a job or communicate with people you just met or something like that, it becomes sort of a necessity. And you could see those who don't opt into a system like this, whether it's before driving or for the more general reputation – it calls to mind what new eBay users look like who haven't bothered to establish a reputation. They have this little cool shade icon next to them. At least that's what it used to be, which doesn't indicate that they're cool. It indicates that they're shady. You better not trust these people because they must have some reason for opting out of the system. And that's probably not something we want to have happen.
Yeah. Well, I have a friend, a very very wired friend, very tech-savvy friend who made a big show of quitting Facebook about 4 months ago and made a big announcement about it. And he did. And then I quietly got a Facebook friend request from him about 2 days ago. And he said, there's simply no, in 2010, it's just like having a phone. You kind of just have to be on it.
Well, that, and then it turns out people have to start worrying about kind of the sort of brand management issues that previously were reserved for like Kleenex and Disney. But as you establish a presence online that is independent of you, that sort of your Facebook profile is up there with a neon sign 24/7, even while you're sleeping, it's accruing comments or, you know, having things posted on its wall, you actually have to start minding it if your reputation is important to you for other people that might encounter it online.
So which design agency have you hired to make the Jonathan Zittrain logo? Because I need a good referral for the John Moe logo. I'm getting nowhere with it right now in terms of my branding.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because I think we've seen increasingly for various commercial phenomena, entertainment phenomena that have a kind of cachet to them, they've actually realized that they should be in the avatar-making business. So for a while, there was the Mad Men icon generator, and a number of people on Facebook and with other products were using Mad Menified identities. And
right.
There was a Simpsons one. And so, yes, I actually think these mass-produced identities that then brand you and tie you to a certain entertainment phenomenon are becoming more and more prevalent.
I'll just have to ask our listeners to come up with logos for both of us and see what they come up with. So then, you know, it's a brave new world, and it's dizzying and my head's spinning. And that brings us to the idea of reputation bankruptcy, because even brands out there sometimes declare bankruptcy and go out of business. Tell us how this
Indeed
works.
Indeed it does, yes. So as we see a world in which more and more there's sort of this vector being created digitally for you that various intermediaries are recommending you to others or maybe not recommending you to others. You get to the question of, all right, if I want to curate that, if I want to have some say in how I am seen, other than allowing hidden algorithms to determine, you know, what my worth is to other people, how can I do that? And what we've seen so far are either services like Reputation Defender, which is actually run by a former student of mine, and I'm on its advisory board, I should say, so I've kind of invested in the company. But they try to go out and on a one-off basis say, we will try to curate your reputation. If there's bad stuff, we'll try to crowd it out with good stuff. If there's good stuff, we'll try to amplify that. And it really does, again, put the individual in the responsibility of having to be a kind of brand manager like a company would be in curating its online identity. My hope would be to see a world in which the intermediaries themselves have been persuaded to not just answer only to themselves on how they rank people and rate them, but to understand that there should be some elements of fairness in there. So one element of fairness that might be easy to understand and implement is after a while, bad stuff at least, and maybe good stuff too, but it should expire. That we actually, you know, this is America. There are second acts. You can reinvent yourself, and you don't want to have one misstep hurt you forever.
I can change. And I promise I can change.
Exactly. South Park right. Motto, as yes. it were. And I think that's important because there are a number of people maybe who are in high government service and want to go even higher who really like they live sort of these artificially two-dimensional lives so that there's nothing that can ever be hung on them. And if that's the way everybody starts living, I think that is inauthentic and worrisome. So there ought to be ways in which the system quite naturally can either on a rolling basis fade out and appropriately discount stuff that happened a long time ago or even allow the kind of one-time pulling of a lever so that you can sort of discharge your old or growing reputation and get another chance. And maybe it would indicate that you had done that, just like people who have filed for financial bankruptcy have that indicated. But at least it can get you out of the sort of, again, for the financial metaphor, the kind of just debt cycle where you're borrowing to pay the interest and then you're borrowing more to pay that interest and you just can't get out of it, a chance for people to try again. And that is not something I would imagine you'd have whoever the Amazons are going to be as custodians of our personal reputations. It's not something they would naturally build in unless we're out here blandishing them to do it.
Well, I mean, it sounds like a great idea, but the web never forgets. Even pages that get deleted are cached on Google or put on the, you know, archive.org on the Internet Wayback Machine. You know, wouldn't you need like almost a fascist level of control over the Internet to get something like this to be implemented?
Well, let me be clear. I am not a fascist. I do not support fascist levels of control. Okay. So you're right that if that's what we're required,
this just
I would
in,
think
Jonathan Zittrain, not a fascist.
Exactly. But there's a trend going on the web that in other forms of expression I have been sad about, which is a sort of consolidation going on. In fact, we were just earlier talking about email and how, boy, it's really hard to live life without an email address. Of course, technology has already leapfrogged that. It's very easy these days to live life without an email address sure. because you could just have a Facebook account and Facebook message people or direct on Twitter or something. And these are not all interchangeable things at one level because email is one of the last great unowned digital applications. There is no email administrator up in the sky, talk about fascist, that runs everything and determines who gets one and who doesn't. It's a highly distributed system where anybody can set up an email server and then they're in business. They've got email addresses. It's just a protocol, a collective hallucination. That's not true about Facebook, about Twitter direct messaging. These things are not hallucinations. There's a company called Twitter and it manages direct messages. And if somebody's spamming with them, you call Twitter and they are the great Tweeter in the sky. They can control that. So I have worries about that for many other reasons. But for our purposes here, I think what it means is that reputation is not likely to end up being some great collective hallucination the way email is. I don't think inherently it couldn't be that way. You could build a system that way, but it just isn't turning out that way. Instead, what we'll see is that there are a few, and by a few I mean between one and five companies that will be the stewards of these ever-growing bodies of data about people and the judgments that get made upon them. Just like Google right now is a major steward of everything on the web, and then ways in which, if a query is given, it will tell you the top 10 sites you want to look at for that query. If you tell Google, get this out of your index, which Google gets told that all the time and takes stuff out of its index from different countries, from lawsuits, that kind of thing, takedown notices, that has a huge impact on whether people can see the thing that Google has been asked to take out. And similarly, my strong suspicion, for better or for worse, is that there will turn out to be a handful of these systems where your reputation really counts, and that's where you could do the blandishments and get them to have certain standards. One other quick example of this would be, it's true that once sort of an incriminating photo gets popular or it gets to become an internet meme, it appears everywhere, and it's really hard to bottle that thing up again. On the other hand, there's sort of a sense of Facebook as a semi-porous community. People can show photos only to certain select friends, and it doesn't escape that bubble a lot of the time. And they can even tag and untag stuff with a pretty sophisticated system that Facebook came up with, where that greatly affects what level of privacy we can expect. And that's an example then of a system that you really could tweak that would have a huge impact on people's privacy, despite the fact that we think of the web as just this big ocean of data that can't be controlled.
What I wonder about this, if we would head toward an idea where reputation bankruptcy would be possible, or even selective, you know, reputation management that you can really nuke stuff that you don't want out there in the world. Are we moving to a point where we will have a single identity online? Because historically online, it's full of, you know, fake names and, you know, multiple emails, and you can't tell who's who anymore. As this gets bigger and bigger and bigger, do we move to a consolidated identity?
Well, I think we're starting to see that. Certainly, there are people within, believe it or not, an identity community who talk about this stuff all the time. And there's lots of viewpoints there, but I think they share in mind, just like physicists may have very different ideas about how the universe works, but they all share the notion of wanting a grand unifying theorem if they could just come up with it. And similarly, you see the identity people all seeking a grand unifying identity. Now, maybe it's something called OAuth where it's very distributed. It is kind of a collective hallucination, but maybe it's something like Facebook Connect where different websites that don't want to have to deal with managing your password and who your friends are and all that kind of thing, they just fork that all over to Facebook. They have no other relationship with Facebook, but they allow Facebook into their site to manage all of that stuff so that one identity is your key to all of these sites. And I think there's enough reason from a consumer point of view where that can be very convenient, a single payment system. You can decide that you like something or want to share it, and it goes onto your social graph because it's all integrated with, say, Facebook or OAuth or whatever it's going to be, that you will see maybe people establish a primary identity. In a given transaction, they might ask the system managing that identity not to share who they are, but that they are a teacher, or that they are over 18, or that they have more than $200. And yet that will mean under the hood, that system will have all of the data accrued as you march from place to place, whether you are sharing your name or not in each place. So I do see that as a kind of common thing we'll see.
Can you tell me what OAuth is?
OAuth, spelled O-A-U-T-H, is a proposed set and somewhat implemented of standards by which identity can be established and passed off from one site to another without having one corporate overseer of it. Different sites can decide what to trust from other sites as they pass along in this standardized fashion name, rank, and serial number of an internet user that's wanting to get into the site. I mean, the most clear way that you would see it as an internet user is it's yet another way to establish a single sign-on, and then that sign-on gets you into a whole bunch of sites.
And this is kind of in line with what Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook has said in the past too, and it kind of caught my attention as in internet terms, an old guy who's used to having multiple identities online. He said, you're the same person at work, at home, in your past, in your future, wherever you go, you don't become multiple people. And that's kind of what his whole company is founded on.
Well, I think that's true. And it gets back to the day, if one is a dinosaur about this, where the online world was entirely separate. Maybe you played a game in one place and then you did something in another, but you could basically just say, hey, I'm just visiting. The more and more the online world and the offline world become intertwined, here you are again in a physical location wanting to tweet your location.
Right.
It makes more and more sense to at least have a consistent identity as you go from place to place. And unless you're really feeling like you have a split personality, it can be hard to manage multiple identities. Wait a minute, I'm Captain Marvel and I'm Hot Pants 15. Which of me is checking in to say I'm at the ice cream parlor and want to meet some friends? It's like, well, it depends who Captain Marvel's friends are, sort of thing. And you could see some people just say, oh, screw it. I am who I am and I just have friends. And maybe the friends don't even know where I live or how much is in my bank account, but they know my first name or something. And I'm going to announce that I'm at the ice cream parlor and anybody nearby want to join me.
You know, in interviewing people, you always want to avoid the question where it says, is something this way or is something this way? Because the guest will always say, well, it's a little bit of both. And that's inevitable. And so I was going to ask you, is this sort of single reputation – internet ubiquity, everybody knows where you are all the time. Is it a good thing because we'll drive better and be better citizens, or a bad thing because we'll all be robot automatons?
It depends.
It depends. Well, it's a little bit of both.
Here's what it depends on. It depends on the extent to which that resulting system can augment the autonomy and dignity of the people using it. And if they find themselves dragged into it, they technically opted in, but they're using it because that's where the action is. They can't help but not use it. It's not clear it's autonomy enhancing. If they find themselves using it and then it turns around and bites them, and we actually are all using it hoping that we won't be the ones to be thumbs downed by so many people that we become pariahs. So it's working great for us as long as we're not among the handful of pariahs. I'm not sure that's dignity enhancing. And there are ways to build these systems. If indeed we go to a single sign-on, more single identity trail, I think to make it so that it's both autonomy and dignity enhancing, and something like a concept of reputation bankruptcy is a way to get there. I at least find myself not wanting to be King Canute trying to tell the tide it's time not to come in. I mean, if the world is demanding and producing a single sign-on world, it's hard for me to stand in the way and say, no, 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 it has to be fragmented. You need 18 passwords and 18 accounts and, you know, just like the good old days. Instead, I'd rather see those systems as they get built in ways that promote autonomy and dignity among the people using them.
It kind of gets to the issue of whether humanity is fundamentally kind or not, doesn't it?
Well, and that's an issue I've been doing a lot of thinking about. I did a TED Talk last year called The Kindness of Strangers, trying to make the argument that huge swaths of the way the internet work depend on human kindness to function rather than on sort of very strict rule and sanction punishment to keep bad apples in line. My claim is that kindness actually can keep the bad apples in line too. So I think you're right that if your view of humans is that they are extremely self-interested and at times vindictive, then systems that try to give some running room, that don't have penalties but still have standards or requests that people make, are naive systems, and we just need to build in enforcement from the start. On the driving example, there's a guy named Lior Strahilovitz at the University of Chicago who wrote an article called How's My Driving? That actually evaluates and takes up the bumper sticker on the back of commercial vehicles sometimes for the fleet that says, call this 800 number, how's my driving? And part of that is the threat of sanction if you should do wrong. My sense is we ought to at least try the first time around to have a world in which mores, norms, and customs get people helping one another. And I hate to use it as an example because it's the one example for which there aren't a ton of others of its caliber, but you look at Wikipedia And this is something that's under constant attack. There are people vandalizing it all the time. There are spammers trying to turn every article in Wikipedia to an ad for a Rolex watch, just like they're trying to make every email be that too. Now, there's no custodian of email, and that's why there's so many spam Rolex watch ads there. There are custodians of Wikipedia, probably to an order of magnitude between 3 and 5,000 in America working on English language Wikipedia. And that's enough. That's amazing to think. But they get up in the morning and they spend time fixing Wikipedia because that's just what they do. And they don't get a paycheck for it. And the kind of recognition they get for it might be a barn star awarded by a fellow Wikipedian in the sense that their homepage there will be edited to include a picture of a star. And, I mean, you just look at that and it's, wow, well, couldn't they just edit their own page like, you know, a Latin America dictator of the 70s and just award themselves a bunch of stars? And the answer is, yep, they certainly could, but it just wouldn't feel good. So they wait and they get stars from others. And this is a system that ends up being, you know, a huge boon to the rest of us who just look at Wikipedia rather than editing it.
See, we started talking about reputation online, and now here I am thinking about society. So now my mind is blown. So that concludes our discussion with Jonathan Zittrain from Harvard University's Berkman Center for Internet and Society. Thanks, Jonathan.
A pleasure.